In this episode, we're giving away Batman. The Dark Knight Rises. This is from Knight Models, and this is the two-player starter set. Oh, guys, it has the Dark Knight, it has Catwoman, it has the Batpod in it, it has Bane and his goons, and it has a tumbler in
it. Don't forget the GCPD, they're there too.
The GCPD are in there too, as is terrain, as is a mat, as is the rule books. It is a stonkingly good box. So, if you want to be in with a chance of winning this, will we change it up this week?
Yeah.
Okay. If you want to be in with a chance of winning this, come across to ontabletop.com and comment on this post on ontabletop.com. And we will pick a random winner from that post. That means that...
Yeah.
If they're going to ding my dong or hit subscribe or hit the like button.
Yeah, they're doing it because they love us.
You have to do it because you like us.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Weekender. It is Saturday here on Tabletop. I am joined in the studio by Jerry and by Ben, and we have all the latest gaming goodness for you this Saturday morning. Welcome to the show, lads.
Hola.
Ben, it's, well, we're back from Salute.
We are.
And it was crazy. Jerry, how did you find the first one?
My first one?
Your first one working.
All right, that's different. Good. Clean. Family fun. If only I had more time. more historic tables. So many historic tables, sadly lacking.
The highlight of the show for me had to be that Flash Gordon Lego table.
It was nice. It was very nice to the strongest table, and... I don't think we got near that at all. That was the Boudiccan Rebellion. But the entire table was on like a 1-3 slope. Ah. So it was an entire 8x4 where the Celts were literally running up a hill to get to the Romans on the Roman road.
Nice.
Really meant to go back to that.
Yeah, it's one of those things you always find at Salute. There is so much to see and you have such a tight time frame for it.
Mm.
Ben, any highlights from yourself?
I particularly liked that Lego table. I thought that was really cool. I really enjoyed the one that was done. I think it was some kind of rebellion. I can't remember where it was. I think it was in the Far East, and it had like this amazing river running down the middle of it, and it had this amazing castle on one side. So it was this really good mashup of all kinds of different terrain types. That was really cool. And also the Burrows and Badgers tables were very nice as well. So
that was the Tompkin table, the Vietnamese one.
Yeah, was it, the Vietnamese one. Yeah.
All right. Well, just as a quick note to everybody out there, the live blog is still up, still running, and you still have time to get your comments in to win one of the 15, I think, prizes that we had there.
Meum prizes.
I think we did a lot of them. So we had stuff from Bandua, from Kraken, from Two Fat Lardies, from Foreground. Crazy, crazy stuff. And so it's one of those shows I enjoy because you're in, you do it, and you go home. It's just so quick to run through everything, but there's always so much to see. And some gorgeous tables.
Lovely tables. So many historic tables. So many historic tables. And, and Flash, may I just say, Gordon's alive.
Flash.
It was such. If you haven't seen it, you need to go and check out the video in the live blog because it was such an amazing table. And the way they put together the mechanics for it as well was really cool.
Richard did an entire system. So it required nothing except Lego figures, bits of Lego.
Yeah.
Here is the system. It's Lego.
One of my favorite companies that I saw there, and it was the first time they'd been to the show, was actually the guys at Kraken. They do some gorgeous gaming mats, and they recently did a Kickstarter for gaming tables. It's just beautiful stuff. They've actually got one of my favorite mats. It's like a winter city with cobbled streets, and I use it all the time in Let's Plays and stuff. It's just really good. Right. In other updates, Ben, what have we got?
Oriskany and Gianna are going to be hosting a live stream over on the weekend. I think it's on Sunday at 5 o'clock BST. And this is, as I say, Sunday, 14th of April. They're going to be using the Wessex Games rules for Air War C21, and they're going to be playing out a little bit of the Falklands War in a live stream. So you'll be able to tune into that. It's going to be a proper old school war game, top down stuff with fighter planes and all kinds of things like that. So if you're interested in that kind of side, if you're sort of a historical gamer, you've got that option there for you. As well as that, just let you know in that post, which will be linked down below, you'll also be able to follow through to Oriskany's project that he's been putting together, because he is also doing a series in the future on the Falklands War as part of the SitRep podcast. So if you're interested in following along with that and finding out a little bit more about it, which is potentially one of those modern conflicts that not a lot of people have really seen too much of, then you've got some really cool options coming up for that in the near future.
Okay, in other news, so we are just rolling off Salute, but we are already doing our prep work for our next big event, which is UK Games Expo, which is a huge one at the end of May, I believe, Ben? Yeah?
Yeah, end of May, beginning of June. Mm-hmm. So.
And right off the back of that, we actually have a little bit of an announcement to make for something that a lot of people will be excited for, but I'll let Warren tell you about it.
It's boot camp time.
Yeah.
Yes, this weekend we're putting up for our backstagers and for you guys very shortly. We are doing a D-Day weekend event.
Yeah.
So we're inviting you to come and spend the D-Day weekend with us mm-hmm. on Battlefront as we fight out the 4th edition late war stuff. Mm. Would you get a load of this? So the tickets are $79.99. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And it's for the Friday, the Saturday, and the Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
We're opening up early on the Friday, and then on the Sunday we're going to have open gaming here in the members suite, and mm-hmm. we're just going to have so much fun, and we're going to have a lot of entertainment.
Yes,
because we enjoyed the entertainment at the last boot camp.
Yeah,
immensely. We'll even talk to Justin about Nostradamus. No, wait.
Oh God! Flashbacks.
So there's a couple of slight changes. Firstly, as the last time, there's no accommodation included because you can find accommodation locally. And this time we're making a change. We're not including food and dinners this time.
Okay.
What we're going to do is we're going to have kind of set break hours where we can go over to the pub.
Right, and then will we just have like a recommended list of places to go locally then?
Yeah, well, we'll be going over to the courthouse because the food has got good in the courthouse again.
Oh, has it?
It has.
Okay.
Yeah. They do an amazing gammon. So if you the food is pretty good around here. So rather than serve the usual yellow food,
yeah.
I know you're going to miss the yellow food.
It's
but
so
we
tasty.
We'll do something different. It means you can have a pint and stuff during on your downtime as
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
So no food, no accommodation. Right, the goodies. So it's going to be a weekend of hobby.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a weekend of the breakout from D-Day.
Yeah.
And each of you who join us, and we have 20 seats, mm-hmm. each of you are joining
20,
us.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Each of you who join us are going to get the following. You're getting both Americans and Germans. You're going to love this. You're going to get 5 Shermans,
mm-hmm.
75 mils. You're going to have 3 Sherman 76s. Mm-hmm. You're going to get 32 U.S. parachute rifle platoon guys.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get 6 Panzer Grenadier HQ guys. You're going to get 56 Panzer Grenadier platoon guys, so 2 platoons. You're going to get 2 7.5 anti-tank guns. Is that Stugs by any chance?
Those will just be regular right. anti-tank guns.
And you're getting 3 Panzer IVs. You're also getting a rule book. You're getting a flying bomb terrain piece. And you're going to get dice and unit cards. You're mm-hmm. going to get an acrylic set of tokens and objectives. You're going to get a special unit card box. There'll be spot prizes as well. And there might be one or two surprises, okay? It works out currently like 107 minis
yeah,
that you're going to
get.
And then on the weekend, we can decide between us whether you're going to play American or Germans. But you'll be leaving with both. And this weekend, we're going to be doing a bit of building, a bit of painting, a mm-hmm. bit of playing. We're going to try and see if we can get some cosplayers and stuff in.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have some fun.
Well,
D-Day weekend.
Hang on. You may have just angered every last historical reenactor out there. They're not cosplayers.
They're reenactors.
Bad Warren.
Sorry, dudes. They're reenactors. So, yeah. For backstagers, the link... to where you can book your ticket is now live.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it might have went live last night. If you're a backstager and if you want to be in with a shot of getting the early tickets, maybe come and join backstage with us, and then whatever's left, then we'll be bringing right out. But there is your boot camp. Spend D-Day with us. We're going to have a blast. Right, in this episode. Oh my God.
Yeah,
we're giving away the Batman 2-player starter set from Knight Models. We have been through it It's excellent.
It's lovely.
It's really good. So in this one, you get Batman, The Dark Knight, isn't it?
Yeah. It is the Christopher Nolan one.
Yeah, so you get The Dark Knight, you get the Tumbler, you get the baddies, Bane.
Yeah, so you've got Bane and his goons with a bat pod.
Yeah.
You've then got Batman, Catwoman with the...
The bike.
Sorry, it's the bat pod.
Yes.
The other one's the Tumbler.
Yeah.
And you also get some GCPD there.
Yeah, so, and there's terrain in the box, there's a map in the box, there's rule books in the box.
All the tokens and measuring stuff you need.
So dudes, all you have to be in with a chance on winning this is, will we change it up this week?
Yeah.
Yeah, come across to beastsofwar.com on tabletop.com and post your comment over here on the website. Mm. And we will be picking a random winner only from on tabletop.com from that post. That means that if you're going to ding our dong this week or hit subscribe or hit that like button,
you're doing it because you love us.
You'll be doing it because you love us. Okay, time to get on with the show.
So yes, everybody, we are having another boot camp. So brace yourselves for some D-Day action with the guys at Battlefront. This is one that I'm looking forward to because World War II in 15mm, it's always just good fun. The last one we did was in, I believe it was 15mm Desert we did last time.
Yes.
This time I think we're probably going to be looking at a bit of the breakout from Normandy, which is good timing. And it's right on the anniversary as well.
Very cool.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. All right, Ben, time for some news. What's been happening in the world this week?
So the first bit of news comes out of the guys at Fantasy Flight Games, and that is there's going to be some new additions to those people that are playing as, you know, their battles as part of the Galactic Empire versus the Rebels. The first of these was the introduction of the Imperial Shore Troopers, which will soon be followed by the Imperial Corridor Troopers and the Imperial Roof Troopers, which are also going to be coming out very, very soon as well. I jest, of course. But this is the Imperial Shore Troopers that you would have seen in Rogue One. They're slightly more specialized, a little bit more kitted up than your traditional Stormtroopers would have been. They're actually come with an upgraded version of their regular blaster, which is pretty cool. They also come with a sort of long-range heavy weapon as well, and they've got a mortar. So if you want to try and blow some rebels up and send them back into the water, you've got some options there, which is very awesome. I really like the design of their armor in particular. I think their armor looks very, very cool indeed. And I could see it being redone and repatterned so that you could use it in urban environments and all kinds of different things as well, regardless of the tagline of them being shore troopers. The other news, which was very cool, as well as the stormtroopers getting to run around on the beaches, you've also got those that can ride on dewbacks. So if you want to be playing some games set on Tatooine where you've got the dewbacks that the stormtroopers were riding around on, you've got some options there as well. They again have a selection of different weapon options, so you can either have them with a regular blaster, a long-range weapon, or you can tout them with a flamethrower if you like, if you want to burn your enemies to a crisp when you get up close to those rebels. And of course, the dewback itself can start clawing away at things and killing them. So yeah, some really interesting new stuff coming up for the Galactic Empire there if you're going to be playing some games of Star Wars Legion.
Well, Jerry, do me a favor. Scroll up to the top to that first unit, because I'm noticing something that feels incredibly wrong to me for any form of Imperial Trooper.
Right.
Have a look at the shooting dice on this. They're firing with black dice. That's not right. They should be firing the worst dice.
As I say...
Why should they be firing the worst dice?
Because Stormtroopers can't hit crap.
They can. We know that they were the best shots in the galaxy. That's why whenever they take out the Sandcrawler at the start, Obi-Wan specifically says only Stormtroopers could be this accurate.
Well, what happened the rest of the movie?
They were deliberately let go. Remember whenever they leave the ship, Tarkin specifically turns to Vader and goes, I'm putting my neck on the line, letting them go. That was just to make it look like they were having a hard time escaping, but they wanted the rebel base. That was all planned.
Okay,
all planned from the start.
Is there a tinfoil hat under the hat?
It doesn't need to be a tinfoil hat. That's how the film progressed. That's called story, that is.
I just call it character armor.
Oh, no.
Can't shoot the main character.
Well, you can.
Unless you're George R. R. Martin. Yeah.
One of the other cool things that came out of the Star Wars Legion announcements and was announced sort of at Adepticon a couple of weeks ago now was the coming of the Clone Wars, which is very, very cool as well. So if you don't want to play in that sort of original trilogy, you can look to the prequels and playing in the games with Obi-Wan Kenobi, General Kenobi versus General Grievous and the battle droid armies versus the Republic Commandos, which I think was really, really cool indeed. This, and this might be controversial, is probably where I would have thought they were going to start when it came to Star Wars on the table. I think there's a lot more options for people to bring to the tabletop, especially when it comes to wargaming as a whole, because as well as of all the Republic clone troopers you've got there. You've also got a lot of their flyers and vehicles and walkers and all things like that on both sides as well. So it's a lot more, there's a lot more depth, I would have said. And also, the interesting thing about it as well is that one of the big things for them when they were coming looking at that first range was they were trying to cover everything in the movies. Now, there's quite a few vehicles and all kinds of things in the movies, but a lot of it's like not really shown too often. So it's been interesting seeing this sort of like change up of what they're doing here. But all the core rules are exactly the same for when this new box set comes out. It works perfectly alongside everything that already exists for Star Wars Legion, so you don't have to worry about that. There may be a few tweaks here and there and that kind of thing, but it'll be more focused, obviously, on the Clone Wars and the fights between the Republic and the I can't remember what they're called now.
The droid army,
but they have a name. The Separatists. That's the thing.
Separatists.
That's the one.
Well, this is leaving me sitting there thinking, and I know I'm about to set the internet on fire. Gungan army.
That could definitely be a thing. Yeah, if they're gonna do everything from the movies, then the Gungans are gonna be there.
I want to see General Jar Jar out there.
I haven't seen it on that, but I'm fairly certain whenever they announced it that they said the core troopers for the Legion were going to be hard plastic.
Uh-huh.
They're swapping across from Sprueless.
Ah, that's so intriguing.
Yep. And I can't remember who it was, whoever's in charge of Legion over FFG during the Q&A session was saying they may go back and redo the Rebels and Stormtroopers, retool those to hard plastic as well, which would be good because the initial release were okay.
Mm-hmm.
But they did suffer from that sort of PVC softness, which the newest stuff doesn't have. They're a bit sharper in the detail, but having hard plastic as the basic core would be very good.
Yeah, one thing I think anybody who's interested in their Legion right now should do is possibly go back to the flight report that we recorded at Gen Con last year, because it was really, really good just for getting information of what was on the way. And I don't know if all of it has landed yet, but I know they did talk a little bit about doing prequel stuff in that flight report. Remember, Ben? Oh no, you weren't there. It was me and Sam.
Yeah, but I did remember that they were doing. They did talk about a lot of the stuff they were going to be doing as part of the core movies, and also that a little bit more of that extended universe that was taken up by Disney and all that kind of thing. So there's plenty for them to deal with, especially when it comes to the animated series and that kind of thing as well. So they've done all that stuff for other games that they've got Star Wars license, so Destiny and Imperial Assault and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason why they wouldn't be including it in Legion in some form. So
yeah, what's next?
So next up, we've got some historical news, and these are two Perry miniatures announcements. The first of these was one that was shown off at Salute last weekend, and that is that they are going to be working on a new set of French line infantry for those people that like their Napoleonics. The models you're seeing here are their three-ups, so they're slightly larger than you would have imagined. These are like the big ones that they sort of then take everything down from and turn them into the sprues and stuff that you see in your normal boxes. These are going to be a set of plastic miniatures that will cover the period between 1807 and 1814 for all those people that want to be very, very specific about it all. But it will come with a whole bunch of different options, as most Perry miniatures kits do, for seeing them running, shooting, kneeling, marching, all kinds of things like that. You'll have loads of different head options, loads of different kit options and weapons and all that kind of thing as well. They do a really good job when it comes to these, and it's been a big thing for a lot of people that like their Napoleonics, because the British were out for a long time and they've actually started to get around to doing the French in a sort of fashion that isn't just them marching towards their inevitable doom at the hands of the British. So very cool.
Now, am I right in assuming that the Perrys are still doing purely traditional sculpts?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So pretty much all of their stuff is done hand sculpted, based up from, you know, sort of using in the metal stuff and then working in green stuff and that kind of thing. But yeah, it's all hand sculpted and then gets turned into these amazing molds that you see here.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. It's nice to see sort of the old guard, as it were, still doing things their way and still making beautiful, gorgeous stuff.
Oh yeah, there are plenty of people out there who haven't succumbed to CAD design yet.
Mm-hmm.
Long may it last. Because I always think there's something about hand sculpted that you just can't reproduce with CAD design.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the artistry of sculpting versus the technical aspect of it whenever you're working in a 3D design.
Yeah, but the 3D always just looks a bit too smooth.
I see.
It doesn't have some of the...
So what, you like seeing the odd fingerprint in the model?
Well, no, I never like seeing a fingerprint in the model. That just shows a lack of talent there if they don't smooth out their fingerprints. But the... not everything needs to be perfect, and sometimes you see that with CAD design stuff, that I think an awful lot of stuff gets described as soulless sometimes, and I think that's about right, where it's just too perfect, too pristine, too glossy.
I think a degree of it is that almost it's a strange use of the word, but it's a kind of like an uncanny version of like a miniature, because it looks human,
yes,
but for some reason it's too symmetrical. For example, that seems to be a lot of the complaints that sometimes you get out of CAD. We're seeing a lot of people doing some amazing stuff in that kind of field, like the guys at Weird do some fantastic stuff with their miniatures when it comes to their like the way that they develop things for their characters and that kind of thing. But I do agree that there is something about those hand sculpted models that still rings true with a lot of people. So
See, I really think it depends on what you're trying to represent between the two methods. If you've got like a vehicle or something that's say high sci-fi and stuff, you're expecting that precision, perfect hard lines.
But it's something older, that's fine,
like horse Napoleonic stuff, that you would expect, there's going to be some flaws, some bumps and dents in it. So, I can see where you're coming from with it, but I think each have their place.
Oh, yeah. Mostly the old stuff's better, though. Always better.
You're a very black and white person, Jerry. It is or it is not.
No, there's no shades of grey. No shades of grey at all.
All right. There's another one then, Ben, yes?
Yeah, so some more stuff from the Perrys that came out a couple of weeks ago and was announced at, well, was released at Salute, was the addition of their new US infantry set that came out. So this was again, large plastic set that comes with a whole bunch of different options for you to create your new US army on the tabletop. So, for example, if you're going to be playing something like D-Day, or you're going to be battling through France and Normandy during the invasions, that kind of thing, in games like Bolt Action, here are your 28mm options for you to bring to the table. As I say, a little bit like what they did with the French, there's going to be loads of character packed into these. So if you want to build your standard troopers, if you want to build your commanders, your officers and that kind of thing, you're always going to have some kind of option in there as well, which is really cool. I'm not entirely sure that the pre-order period is still going, so there might be a little bit of a drop off when it comes to those metal miniatures that were included to begin with, but all of those plastics are there. And as I say, it's almost like this one-stop shop for you to build like effectively a tiny little American army to use on the tabletop, because a lot of it was done, you know, during this period of squad-based combat. It wasn't big huge battles between massive forces, so very cool stuff from them. And once again, really nice to see the amount of character that's put into the Perry miniatures range. So.
Well, I mean, like 42 miniatures in the box, you cannot turn your nose up at that.
Exactly.
Even for Bolt Action, that's pretty much most of your force right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, can you make, like, heavy weapon crews around out of this, or is it all just, you know, M1?
Well, you make support weapons.
Yeah, so you've got rocket launchers and sniper rifles and that kind of thing as well. So you've got the kind of the typical kit that your American soldiers would have been carrying around on a sort of daily basis during the war. Yeah. So
there's the 30 cals in there and the bar.
Okay, that's good, because then I can do like a little medium machine gun crew or something.
Well, you can make a light machine gun. I don't think the 30 cal counts for a medium.
Well, I thought the 50 cal was the heavy, the 30 cal was the... Or sorry, yeah, 50 cal was the heavy. 30 cal was the medium, and then it was like the BAR was a light.
No, BAR doesn't count as machine gun in bolt action.
Ah,
no.
I see.
No, it's more like a.
It was a really a weird gun. Support weapon.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just more like an assault rifle kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't even an assault rifle.
Well, no, it is an assault rifle of a type. It's a Browning automatic rifle. That's what BAR stands for. So it's single shot or some form
for
of semi or auto.
Within the squad, its ammunition capacity was just way too low. Yeah.
But the support weapon in the squad would have been your 30 cal. That was just some weird little thing that they just decided to run with.
It's funny, they actually had those during World War I, but they actually didn't deploy them to their troops because they were scared the Germans would get their hands on them and start making them. Hence, the Americans were actually given a French support weapon, the Shona, which had a banana clip with the sides cut out. With a leaf spring kind of thing on the inside, so like a zigzag spring. And if you're thinking you're in the trenches with an open-sided magazine, what's going to happen when you're in the trenches with that? It's going to gum up to buggery.
I thought you were going to say magpies were going to fly down and steal all the shiny bullets because they love shiny.
They probably did that as well.
Yeah. I imagine that's the first problem there, is trying to keep the magpies away.
All right, what's next, Ben?
So next up is actually some news on the game design front. So a lot of people will know James and Sophie of Nitty Cat Games. They worked on the Hellboy board game. They're working on a new one for Hobbs and I can't remember the other name of it. That's really bad. I'm going to look it up now. Newbury and Hobbs, that's what it is. They're bringing out a new board game for that. They're also working on Devil May Cry, which has got a new game coming out from Steve Forge Games. And they are running a series of three courses throughout May, June and July, helping you design your own games. Now, they can be board games, card games, miniature games, whatever you want to try and design. You can come along as an entire newcomer to the idea of designing a game, come to these workshops and go through all the different stages of creating one. So you'll have one at the beginning, which starts in May, which is all about starting off with your game and developing that core idea. You've got one that follows on from that, where you're refining the project and bringing it slightly more in tune with what you think people that have playtested it and think like, and that kind of thing as well. And then, of course, you've got one all about finishing your game and getting to that final draft of what you've tried to present. Now, these are spread out across the 3 months so that you've got plenty of time to practice and, as I say, play test as well between the different sessions. But they're very much there for you to come, share all your creative ideas, design what you want to design, get some feedback from people that have been in the industry for a really long time. I mean, James and Sophie have been doing stuff for quite a while now, so it's really cool to see what they're doing. So if you want to get yourself down there and design a game, there are some really cool options for you. They've sold about half of their tickets, I think, for the first session so far. So if you're really interested in this one, you need to go and check it out. And there are more details, and of course, in the link down below, so go and check that out. But as people say, there is a game in everybody. So get to the tabletop and see what you can make.
Nice.
This, I think, is an absolutely fabulous idea, because how many times have you been sitting there and had an idea for a game, but so you get like your main construct of what you would like to see, but then actually figuring out, how do I get those mechanics onto the table? You know, and actually getting it into sort of a coherent layout, you know, having some instruction on that, I think is going to be incredible for folks.
Tandy, I also knew James was saying this morning, if you can't get to that, their Patreon supporters from Needy Cat can actually, will be getting the course material as part of the Patreon. Yes. So if you're sitting in somewhere silly like Idaho and don't want to come across three times over 3 months for a weekend, then you could still, if you're interested in this, you can at least get the sort of course part of it. You know, you won't get the interaction that they'll have on the day, but you could potentially go, well, you can use that. And then James and Sophie are very active on social media and very friendly. So you could potentially then turn around and go, oh, I was reading this. What exactly do you mean about this? Or what's this little bit here? Mm-hmm. How do you think that would be? You know, so you could still get feedback from them, even if you can't make it across to Nottingham.
Yeah, that's definitely an idea. And I like the fact that you've got that nice big gap between, because it does let you just take away that course and then do the homework on it. So after you've been through the course, you cycle through the things that they've taught you and actually take it so it's ready to go to that next step, and you have the breathing room and the time to do it without rushing something out. Because people always forget just how long it takes to make a finished product.
Yeah.
All right, next up.
So finally for the news, we've got some more sort of historical moderns for you to get stuck into, and this is from the guys at White Dragon Miniatures. Now, White Dragon Miniatures have been doing some amazing stuff, and this is for their new-ish range, which is called Courage in Conflict, I think it's called. I can't remember now. Man, I'm losing it. Courage in Contact, that's what it's called. And this is a new set of options for both the Taliban forces and the British, if you're going to be fighting out battles in the Gulf and that kind of thing, and across the Middle East. So, for the Taliban forces, they introduced some new stuff. So you've got two sets of troopers on bikes. So you've got one with just a standard rifle, and you've also got one that's touting an RPG. So if you're going to be trying to set up kind of ambushes and that kind of thing, you've got two options there. As well as that, they've designed five different sets of Taliban fighters, all with very individual sculpts to them. So if you want to use those as part of your sort of insurgent group or something, you've got some really good options there. I think there's three pictured in the article there, but as I say, there's five on the web store. The cool thing about that, which I thought was really good, is that you could almost give, as like a games master in a game like Spectre Operations, some sort of incomplete information. You could kind of describe the target that maybe has the intel that your British soldiers need, and then you actually would then have to sort of work out who it was from looking at the models on the tabletop, which I thought would be a really cool idea. But all of the Taliban fighters have their standard AK-47s and that kind of thing, but they've also got things like rocket launchers, grenades, and all kinds of things like that as well. On the British side of things, they introduced two vehicles. So they've got the Foxhound, which is the sort of truck that you can see there. So good for getting your soldiers into the heat of the action. And then it's also mounted up with two machine guns, so you can take control of the situation and make sure they don't get shot at too much when you're in the heat of it all. And also they've designed a couple of quad bikes as well. So a little bit like you would have seen for the Taliban, you've got some guys there that could be sort of like ranging up into better positions to get a good shot at the enemy, like you can see there with the guy with the scope and all that kind of thing. Or you could just use it for planning out a little bit more of a diorama vignette kind of thing as you're sort of carting around some sort of trailers full of equipment and all that kind of thing around a base and all that kind of thing as well. So some very cool stuff from the guys at White Dragon. It's all 28 mil. So if you want to get stuck in and play games, as I say, like Spectre Operations, you've got some really cool options there. So
I'd be tempted to go full Saving Ryan's Privates with this. Remember the bit at the end where they have the Kettencrad and they use it to lure the tank into position where they can take it out?
Yeah.
So you have the British on the quad trying to pull the Taliban's ambush into their ambush. Ambush the ambushers.
That could be cool.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, this is interesting to see because we're seeing more of this, more modern sort of militaries and insurgency fighters being brought to the tabletop. And it's really cool to see because it's a very different style of combat and tactics that you're going to be playing in these games.
Well, there have always been ones kicking around. I mean, the Serbian and Croat forces, along with NATO, there's companies doing that. I think it's one of these things where these days it's easier to get your word out compared to 10, 15 years ago.
Fair point.
So you're just seeing a lot more of it. But,
I think for a lot of people there was an element of accessibility to it as well. I think for some of those older games they were maybe a little bit more crunchy than they are, but I think there's been a lot of companies that have come out now with rules like Skirmish Sangin and that kind of thing where they've kind of developed it so that the rules are a little easier to get into, and then obviously from there you can sort of blow it up and decide exactly where you want to go with it. I think one of the core things about this, and it's something we've talked about on the past weekend or actually with Gianna and Dawn and stuff as well, is that I think these new modern games very much promote that idea from the past of having a games master in control. So you can have like a lot of co-op games and then someone controlling everything that's happening at the table. So you can throw some interesting sort of elements at those players when they least expect it. So, you know, like helicopters coming down, Black Hawk down style and that kind of thing as well. So yeah, very cool.
It's interesting. It's very interesting. All right, guys, I want to take a very quick little break because we've had some guests in the studio, and as you'll have seen recently, we've been starting to do some coverage of Korbal. So I wanted to sit down with Carlos and Helio, a couple of the guys behind the game, and actually have a bit of a chat and give everybody a bit of an introduction into the world of Korbal. If you're up for it, that okay?
Okie dokie.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome. I am joined by Helio and Carlos from Big Chow Creatives and Burning Games, and today we're having a look at Korbal. So this is going to be a bit of an intro into the world and the backstory of this game. So, guys, welcome to the show. Pleasure to have you here.
Same thing.
What is Korbal?
It's a pleasure to be here as well. Well, thank you for having us. Korbal is a 2-4 players sports game, and it's about two to four teams that compete to control the ball. They're launched at high speeds to an asteroid field or a similar field, and they just have to keep control of the ball while avoiding asteroids, going through railguns that will push them in different directions, and just striving to stay safe.
Mm. Now, this is a game that you guys have designed to be very much a competitive piece, so you're wanting to actually see game stores and stuff running nice big tournaments of this, having different teams play against each other. How deep can people go with their tactics on this game?
Very deep, to be honest. So there's a lot of different combinations. Each character has one or two unique abilities, and then each character has six skills. So all of the skills are shared among all of the players. Some might be good at some stuff, some might be bad at it, and some might not even be able to use them. But there's six skills and one or two special abilities per character, right? So when you put that together in a team of five players on the board, plus three guys that you're going to have in the reserve, and that you're going to be able to swap some characters in the board in the reserve at certain times in the game. You have a lot of synergies that can emerge from that. And you can adapt yourself, so you can put five guys on the board to get the ball, and once you get the ball, you can adapt yourself, take two or three out, and enter with another two or three that will help you keep the ball, because it's a different thing that you're trying to do.
Now, one of the things I've noticed about the game, which I personally really love, is that you're not just constantly gaining points. There's a certain amount of resource management to it, where you're gaining points, but you're also considering, do I spend points, or do I sort of penalize my opponent by knocking points off his score? Yeah. It's a very nice different balance that you can actually have for this kind of game. Off you go.
That's right. So as you mentioned, you can have basically two different strategies. You can just try to score as many points as you can by controlling the ball, or you can try and cause your opponent to lose points by pushing their players out or by injuring them against asteroids or by crossing force fields, things like that. So
Now, one of the key features of this game is actually the board, because it's different to any other board game I've ever seen before, because the board is constantly changing. You have a nice sort of twist on how three-dimensional space works. So if we look at the board here, you can actually see.
And we call it the floating board. That's kind of like the name for it. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that you can remove the tile underneath the board and swap it for a new one underneath the flyers without having to move them, right? So they move independently from the movement of the tile. And basically the idea is that it's representing that the characters are moving in space and these things are coming towards them, right? Mm-hmm. So what you see on the board at this stage is the asteroids and all that stuff that is coming towards them now. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the round, a new tile, a new random tile will come in and the new stuff is going to come towards them.
I love this because it's forcing you to be constantly tactically flexible, because if you're looking at the game and you're thinking, okay, I have this tile perfectly sussed, I know exactly what I'm doing, I've got myself set up for next turn, and it changes and suddenly you get the most horrendous layout of gates, terrain, obstacles that you could ever want, and it's suddenly having to go, okay, well, I have to change everything I'm doing.
Yeah, exactly. So the tile is interesting in the sense that there's basically two main things in there. Mm-hmm. You got obstacles, which can be found between squares, and when you move through them, they will do something to you, right? And then there's the area terrain that will do something to you at the end of the round if you're on top of them. So you can begin the round there, but then move out and you're safe. It's basically you're seeing them coming towards you. Mm-hmm. And exactly, and you have to rearrange all of your plans depending on what is coming towards you and what obstacles you have to jump at this precise moment.
Yeah. You have to stay flexible, and like Carlos said before, you can do that by changing which flyers you have on the board at any particular time. So if the new tile is not too advantageous for you, maybe you can swap some of your flyers and bring people in that will help you in that specific situation.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have to say the flyers are very flavorful, because I've been having a look, reading some of the different stats. I've actually put my favorite one in beneath camera here, because this one character named Wally, he just is big, he is heavy, and you see the way he's sitting on a piece of area terrain here? He actually doesn't care. It's his special ability that if he's on there, he doesn't mind at all. He'll just sit and just grind along the thing.
Yeah.
And if he wants, he can actually grab someone, you know, by the back of the helmet and just, you know, run that face along an asteroid just for a good time.
Yeah. That's basically how you play him. You want to grab someone and bring him with you to the asteroid, because nothing will happen to you, but he will take the hit.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those cinematic moments that you can imagine as just this character holding someone and just running them along the side of him as he continues to hold them, and then zooming off to the next one.
Yeah.
Right. Now, one of the things I did want to cover was the different stats. Just for everybody at home, very quickly, I'd like to give us a quick rundown on what each of the stats is, because there are six of them. Mm-hmm. And I always say, whenever you're learning stats that are symbol-based, it's like learning a micro language. As soon as you understand that micro language, you can instantly read everything very quickly, which is what I love about this game. It's very light and everything's baked in. So from top to bottom, what do we have here?
So we got a ball. That's the one on the top. And basically, you'll use ball for everything related to ball, from stealing the ball to passing the ball to defending the ball as well, right? And well, it's a very important skill, of course, because you get the points with the ball skill. Yep. Then the next one, there's an armor with an impact. That's pushing. So characters can push each other. And if you push a character, he has to move to an adjacent square. So if this character was to be pushed, the green player could choose in which square he has to move and which obstacles he has to cross. But if this one was pushing this one, then he could be pushed out. And that will cost you points.
Yes. And then next one down, we have sort of a fist.
Yeah, grappling. So grappling is very nice. When you grapple a character, as you said, with Wally, you force him to move with you. And the only thing that player can do now is try to ungrapple himself or wait for a friendly to come and help him being grappled.
Yeah.
And you force the movement of the player. You limit his choices. And it's very handy. You can also get out of the board with him, because maybe he has a special ability that you don't want active in the board. So and you don't care losing points as well if you manage to take him out.
Yeah, and again, that comes down to that nice resource management. It might cost me 1 point, but if I'm costing you two, that's twice as good for me.
Yeah, exactly.
And then next down, we have three little arrows.
Yeah, so that's dodge. Mm-hmm. So an interesting thing is that in this game is that you can aggressively counter actions. Mm-hmm. So pushing and grappled can be countered by pushing back, mm-hmm. grappling back, mm-hmm. or by dodge.
Yeah.
Right? So dodge doesn't do anything to your opponent. It just makes him fail the action. Mm-hmm. So why would you choose one or the other? Well, it depends on the situation you're in, mm-hmm. Which skill is your better skill, and you have more chances. But also because if you push back or you grapple back, you're going to get tired. Mm-hmm. If a character gets tired, that means during his next activation, he doesn't have an action.
Yeah.
So sometimes even if your dodge is not as good as your grappling, for example, mm-hmm. you don't want to grapple back because that character is just a distraction for you. You have a main objective that you want to get to.
Yeah, you have a job for his activation.
Exactly. So you don't want to lose it. So you take the chance of losing the confrontation or whatever, mm. and you go for the dodge.
And I suppose as the aggressive player, it can be worth your while just to load in maybe a couple of different people trying to grapple someone to try and force them to take one or maybe even two tired tokens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Just because they kind of have to stop themselves being taken out like that.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of strategies like that and mind games mm-hmm. about like timing. Like in most strategic games, timing is essential. Mm-hmm. So when do you activate a player? When do you care about him being tired or not? That's key for a good strategy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the next two symbols are actually kind of linked together. So what do we have there?
Yeah, so we got hacking and firewall. Mm-hmm. So hacking, basically, you choose any character on the board, doesn't matter where he is, and if you hack him, you give him a hack token, and that character cannot move mm-hmm. For his next activation.
Yeah.
And firewall is basically your counter against that.
Mm. Now, that can be incredibly useful, because if we are flying through space at high speed, and I hack someone who's trying to get out of an asteroid field, it kind of locks them down in place.
Exactly.
And they kind of have to either spend the resources of a character to actually go in and get them out of there. So, yeah. I mean, like, Wally would be the perfect example. If one of my team's locked down and about to hit an asteroid, I can knock him out of the way yeah. with him, and Wally can just sit there going, well, I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, you can push your own players, mm. and that's an automatically successful action. Mm-hmm. And as you said, it's very handy to save yourself.
Yeah.
And what you said about hacking, yeah, it's very important for the timing as well, what we were just speaking about. Because if you have someone, so remember that the asteroid will only affect you at the end of the round, mm-hmm. so you can stay there until the end of the round, right?
Yes.
But the longer you stay there, the more chances are that someone thinks that it's worth hacking that person and keeping there.
Yeah.
Keep him in there.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, probably hacking is one of the most overlooked skills. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it not only serves you to hack other players, but it also serves you to manipulate the terrain, actually.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. So you can also turn off obstacles, you can turn off dangerous force fields, or you can create a trap for your opponent, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't turn off the asteroid, of course, but the obstacles, all the stuff that is electronic, you can turn it off.
Yeah, so the red ones will actually do you damage, the yellow ones will make you tired, and these ones will give you, what is it?
Momentum.
Momentum, yeah. Yes. So you'll actually start drifting whenever you go through those particular railguns, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. They're called railguns, and they give you momentum. Momentum is a very interesting thing. So basically, each of the railguns has an arrow, and they point towards one of the symbols on the sides of the board. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get a token when you cross it. You get a token of the color and shape of mm-hmm. that corner. And at the end of the round, before you have to resolve the terrain and crash against stuff, you are forced to move the number of spaces equal to the number of momentum tokens you got. Mm-hmm. And you keep that until the end of the game, unless you move through royal guns in the opposite direction, mm-hmm. or you leave the board to the reserve. Mm-hmm. Right? So that represents the lack of air and the gravity that you're playing in. If you get a little bit of speed in one direction, you're going to keep that mm-hmm. speed until you manage to get something in the opposite direction.
Yeah, it's, again, we were actually talking about possible playtest rules for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing that actually gave me the idea, what if you actually had a character with the ability so that whenever he pushed you, you actually gained a momentum in that direction?
There is such a character.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
Oh.
There's a character who can gain momentum,
mm-hmm.
and he has an ability that gives him momentum.
Mm-hmm.
He can also cross through railguns to gain momentum,
uh-huh.
and then whenever he pushes someone, he can move his own momentum to the opponent's.
Oh.
To the opponent, yeah.
Right.
Super punch.
Yeah, but it's dangerous sometimes, because sometimes you're like, oh, I'm going to cross two railguns and then punch this guy.
Yeah,
and then you fail, and then you have two momentum in the other, and, and you fly off.
Oh, that is fabulous. That is absolutely fabulous. This is a really, really deep tactical game from what I've seen of it. We've got a couple of games in the can. They will come out. And it's just an absolute blast whenever it's you're thinking against your opponent, trying to guess who will they activate, who will they not. Like, I played one game where Wally unfortunately got locked down quite a bit, and it was just me sitting there going, but he's so good, why are you doing this to him? Because he's so good.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, now, you guys have given me some images to actually show everybody as well, so would you like to maybe start cycling through them?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right, so what do we have first here? Ah, the main board.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a setup for two players.
Mm-hmm.
It showcases the Space Sharks in red. They are specialized in pushing people out of the way. And the Technotics in purple. And the Technotics are all about hacking, manipulating the board, and running different tricks.
I see. Like that. I see. Moving along. Oh, hello.
That's your friend.
Hello, Wally. Yeah. Oh, I love the design work. Which of the... Now, I know this is a partnership between the two companies, so which of the two companies is responsible for the art design and the direction?
So that's Burning Games. That's,
that's Burning Games, yeah.
Okay.
Burning Games did all the concept art, and then Big Tile Creatives created the miniatures from that concept art.
I see. Yeah. I love it whenever you've got two creative groups coming together to make something beautiful. And look at him. He's gorgeous. next up, Preachers. Who are these guys?
So the Preachers are completely different. They are, all of their playstyle is based around getting the ball, right? And they have a lot of synergies. So they have, so usually in the game, basically, when it's your turn, you can activate only one player and one flyer, and then it's your opponent's turn, and you go back and forth, right?
Yes.
So these guys, with a bunch of trickery, they can activate maybe two or three of their own guys in the same round. So they are weak by stats, but they are very strong by, in their strategies and the emergent gameplay that they can create. So one can leave the board, and automatically a friendly from the reserve can move back in.
Oh,
and they can do all this kind of stuff that is very, very cool and very handy.
Okay, so if you're the kind of player that likes playing tricksy shenanigans and movement games with your opponent, this might be the one
for you. Sort of mind games. There's one character, for example, that can at any time swap positions with another one. So usually if someone is trying to do some evil stuff to a character that is very important for your strategy, and you have the other one somewhere on the board, they can just swap. So if he's being pushed, then the other one will be being pushed and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
And sometimes you're like, oh, this area is safe because everyone who's there has been activated. Well, it is not.
Very cool. Okay, so Space Sharks, you quickly mentioned these guys like to push people about. I'm guessing they have the strongest engines in their suits?
Yes.
Yes.
That's the case. They are specialized in pushing and also manipulating momentum, which is the other side of pushing and movement, right?
Yep. Next up, Technotics. Oh, very high-tech looking.
Yeah, so Technotics are the most high-tech guys. They are mostly cyborgs. And basically, yeah, they like hacking. And they like manipulating the terrain. And then they have some other trickery. Like, usually fires from other teams, if they're hackers, they're just hackers. But these ones are always like a hacker with a little bit of a spice. So there's one, for example, that if he hacks someone, he can choose, instead of giving him a hack token, to move him one square.
Oh, that's... No.
Yeah, so that's quite terrible if it happens to you.
There are so many ways that could affect you badly. You can either be moved into terrain, so you're taking damage, move you... Even you could actually, on this particular tile, if it was someone here, you could move them through if they've already activated and leave them on an asteroid, so they're taking one and then 2 points of damage.
Yeah, 2 damage are gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can take only 2 points of damage.
Yeah, after your second, you're out of the game.
You're out of the game. You're
flying back to the hangar.
Yeah, so with one damage, your skills are reduced. Basically, the idea is...
Yeah, so we've got the regular side of the card, and then when it flips... You keep all your skills, but your stats go down just a little bit.
So yeah, but so they are very strong in their hacking and in the trickery, but they're very weak against being pushed and grappled around. So you have to, when you want to face them, you want to be very aggressive at the beginning, so you can counter that.
I see. I see. All right. Next. Oh, we have some gorgeous looking artwork. Who are these?
So these are the mercenaries, and the mercenaries can be carried by anyone. So, because it's a very competitive game, you choose one of the teams, right? Mm-hmm. And then you go and compete with friends.
Yes.
So if you're doing, let's say, like a little tournament between the three of us, mm-hmm. right? What we would do is I create a team, you create a team, Elio creates his own team as well. Mm-hmm. And then when we join together to play, let's say that I am playing you, mm-hmm. Teams are composed of 8 flyers, and I go to play against you with 6 Technotics, for example, yeah. and I keep 2 spaces open mm-hmm. to get some mercenaries to fight against you specifically, right? Ah, so I right. saw my team of 6 Technotics, you saw me your team of 5 Space Arcs, for example, uh-huh. right? And then we take turns to choose mercenaries mm-hmm. to counter whatever we think you're going to do with your team, right? Uh-huh. And then when I play Elio, I can choose another 2 different mercenaries to fit his game style, right?
I see. So there's a mini draft at the beginning of the game for any open slots on your team.
Yeah, exactly.
So you got very nice. Like 2 layers of strategy. The first one is when you choose your starting members of the team, mm-hmm. and then when you choose your mercenaries to counter what your opponent has chosen at the beginning.
Exactly.
I see.
So each mercenary is good at one of the different things. Mm-hmm. So he is good at tricks. He's good at hacking, he's good at movement, he's good at ball, he's good at grappling, and he's good at pushing, right? Mm-hmm. But they don't have many synergies. They're just good characters and whatever it is they do.
Yeah. So they're making up the lacks in those teams because exactly. the teams are very specialized.
Yes.
Awesome stuff. And absolutely gorgeous as well. I love this art direction. You know, it feels super sci-fi, but I'm seeing, you know, little sponsorship brands going on.
Yeah, exactly.
And stuff.
Well, they are mercenaries. They need to get
money
somewhere.
And then, who are these guys?
Yeah, so these are the Bulldogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what's their play style? I mean, like, we already know my favorite Wally. This, I'm going to be honest now, this is kind of the team I'm going for, but I'll let the guys run ahead and tell us how they play.
All right, so the Bulldogs are all about aggression, but rather than pushing you out, they grapple. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they prevent you from running the tricks you had up your sleeve. So mm-hmm. they will just shut you down. Mm-hmm. That's what they do. And they also have a few jacks of all trades that mm-hmm. will make your life hell when you are grappled by their teammates.
I feel kind of bad for saying I like this faction after that description. It sounds like a very, you know, very mean side, but everybody and every team in this game has their mean tricks.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, that's right. So these guys have a very cool character that mm-hmm. when he activates, he copies the text abilities of anyone else on the board, mm-hmm. either from your team or your opponents. Mm-hmm. So that gives you a lot of flexibility, and there's a lot of mind tricks going on with that. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes you actually want to leave the board with a very important player.
Yeah.
Because even if it's going to cost you 1 point, you don't want Chameleon, that's like his name,
yeah.
at that point getting your ability, you know?
Yeah. So Chameleon is the first guy here.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they also have some tricks with the deck. So we didn't explain that, actually. But to resolve actions, mm-hmm. You got a deck of,
I'll grab these.
Cards. Yeah.
So it's this little deck here.
Yeah. And basically, whenever you do an action, the action is going to be confronted. And what each of you is going to do is you're going to draw 1 random card from the top mm-hmm. of the deck and add the value in that card to your skill.
So I was doing a push here.
Yeah.
Start with 3.
Yeah.
And then I would add a 4.
Yeah, so that's a 7. Mm-hmm. And then your opponent would do the same, and whoever has the highest value wins. Mm-hmm. In case of a draw, the attacker wins. Mm-hmm. And what happens is, if the attacker loses, mm-hmm. but only the attacker loses, as a consolation prize, he gets to keep the card, because mm-hmm. each card has a little text ability, right?
Yeah.
So if you're playing it just for the confrontation, you only use the value, mm-hmm. but if you keep it, you get the text ability. And that's a little reaction or instant that you can use at certain points mm-hmm. and come in handy.
So it's good to be aggressive in this game from the sound of this.
Yeah, you always want to be aggressive because even if you lose, mm-hmm. you get a card.
Yeah.
And that's an ability I can get.
Yeah.
And especially with these guys because mm-hmm. they can manipulate the cards.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, nice. And again, gorgeous. Next up, Space Sharks.
Yeah.
Yep. So they're very good at pushing. Give me a character from here that you love.
All right, that would be Sharion for me.
Mm-hmm.
He's the best pusher in the game.
Right.
He's unoriginal, but he just works.
And I think, is that this gentleman here?
Yeah.
I love the dynamism you've caught in the miniatures on these as well, because it does look as if they are hanging in space.
He's just got the rocket arm. He's just going to push you out, no matter what.
Yeah, so, you want to hack him as soon as possible.
Really?
Just keep him in his place.
Okay, you've been warned.
My favorite one, if I can
of course,
is going to be Therinth.
Uh-huh.
This is the team's captain. Mm-hmm. And she has a very cool ability. Well, she has two cool abilities. At any time, she can gain one momentum in any direction.
Mm-hmm.
And at any time, she can resolve it.
Oh.
And that gives her the chance of getting plus one movement, basically. Mm-hmm. Or moving through a railgun and then counter it, because you gain the momentum in the opposite direction.
Okay, important question. If I'm playing this character and I've got, like, two momentum on me, and I choose to resolve momentum, does that resolve both?
Yeah, yes. So you could move many times, like, depending on how much momentum you got.
Okay, a bit of a slingshot.
Yeah. You can just fly off, but you just have to consider it. And that gives her a lot of flexibility, because she can enter places you weren't expecting, and she can take higher risks.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very, very cool. All right, next up is Preachers.
Yeah.
We've heard a little bit about these ones. Who would you say is your best?
I really like Blender. Blender is the one that can swap places with whomever.
Okay, if Blender's sitting here, give him to me.
Yep.
Or her to me. Apologies.
Her.
Yes. Oh, wow.
This is her.
And I like the fact, are these going to come colored whenever people pick them up at retail?
Yeah. So, color and pre-built.
So what you're seeing now are resin prototypes that we assembled ourselves and painted with spray paints.
Yeah.
But the final game will come with pre-assembled plastic miniatures in the color of their team.
I see. Yeah. Now, there's one important thing. Currently, what sort of time frame are you guys aiming for your Kickstarter launch? Because I know we're closing in on it.
Yeah. We're looking at the beginning of April.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be probably April 2nd, something like that. Let's cross fingers. hope that
everything
goes well. But yeah.
Yeah.
It's closing in on us.
Yeah, and then is this the first time you guys have went for, you know, a big miniatures game, or is it something you've done before? Is there much experience behind this?
Right, so we've done RPGs before.
Mm-hmm.
We've done a tiny board game.
Mm-hmm.
That it wasn't our game. Mm-hmm. It was from some friends of ours. But we really liked the idea, and we tried to put it out there. And we've done a few miniatures. We did a few miniatures for Faith. That's a RPG line that we have. But Big Child has a lot of experience making miniatures. I'll let him
tell you. As a Big Child, we've participated in some of the biggest Kickstarters out there, from Cool Mini or Not, like Zombicide, Zombicide Invaders, Green Horde, things like that. Also, Deep Madness, many games that you will probably know.
Okay, so I'll essentially need a video talking to each of you about each of the two companies.
Yeah,
gotcha.
All right.
All right, moving along then. Oh, Technotex. Again, the artwork. Who's this guy on the end with the... Well, his name says it all, Lightning. Who is this?
Right, so Lightning is this fella.
So that would probably be the only non-hacker in the team.
Oh, right.
He can still hack you by grappling you or by pushing you, because he's got this electrical current in his
hands. Not only by pushing you or grappling you, by being pushed or grappled by you.
You lay hands on this guy, he will get you.
Yeah. So
okay.
Whenever that happens, someone is getting a hack talk. So he's dangerous, just don't play with him. Just let him fly.
Do his own thing.
Yeah. Yeah, he's quite fun.
Yeah, and again, I'm loving the actual pose here, because it does look as if he's just mid-leap going after somebody. Mm. And it's something that you guys have a bit more freedom to do, because you're playing in a zero-G environment.
Yeah.
You can have people twisting, turning, floating, moving whichever way you can think. You know, where you're not going to have the classic pose of leader is a guy with a foot on a rock.
Yeah,
yeah.
This was something we really, really wanted to explore. Mm. We did a miniature that was flying for our Faith RPG miniatures line. And then we decided we just have to do an entire line of flying dudes.
Yeah.
How do we do it?
I'm digging it. I'm totally digging it. And then, of course, the game itself. This is the core set of Korbal. What are people going to get in this?
So we're still in the final phases of designing the actual contents of the box. But at the very least, you will get all the miniatures you need for a two-player game, mm-hmm. As well as the terrain, the board, all the cards, mm-hmm. all that. And we are considering whether or not to put two additional teams mm-hmm. in there, just to give you a bit more variety.
Yeah, because yeah. it's a 2-4 player game. Yeah. So it's mainly designed to do competitive two-player games, mm-hmm. but you can play 3-3-2-4-all mm-hmm. or 2-2.
Yeah. I love the sound of the 2-2 because it's the synergies that we're talking about here with the different characters, everybody having their own ability, seeing those chain effects, those knock-on effects just rolling out across yeah. the board could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and in the 2-2, mm-hmm. your friend doesn't have to have the same team. So yep. he could be playing the Space Arcs and I can be playing the Technotix, mm-hmm. and that gives you unique interactions that don't happen otherwise.
Yeah. And then you can put on top of that the mercenaries again.
Yeah, exactly. yeah. So you can... If you plan it well, it can be a crazy match.
Yeah. Now, I accidentally flicked across an image there, so I'll bring it on up. This is actually a close-up of some of the sculpts and poses you guys have done.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing it in the grey plastic, you really do get the sense of just how many components you guys are working on to put this together. I know sometimes whenever a company is doing this, they'll try and keep the sculpts very, very simple, but you guys have kind of pushed the boat out on this one, yeah. which I'm impressed. Well, very much so.
Thank you. Well, it's actually when you stop thinking about just cutting the head, cutting the arms, cutting the legs, and assembling the miniature like that,
yeah.
you get a lot of interesting options, and you can do more than it looks like you could do with just two or maybe three pieces, three parts. Yeah. So if you cut the pieces with some...
Creative thinking,
yeah. You will get lots of things like this.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm looking at the character on the right hand side here. I'm seeing you're actually playing with some of the void space, the negative space within the character.
Yes.
Some of the actual areas where armor plate is sucking way, way in.
Yeah.
And it looks as if there's perhaps actually even a gap there. And on the other side, just seeing the flow and the movement as if there is nothing holding me in position. I am literally just waiting to fire thrusters to move along. The next one, again, this is...
Lightning.
This is lightning. Yeah. And again, seeing that sense of motion that is just coming directly for you. Yeah. Is something incredible to capture in miniatures.
Yeah. This is actually the work of, to me, some of the best sculptors in the miniatures world, mm-hmm. like Hugo Gomez or Alejandro Muñoz or mm-hmm. Daniel Fernandez. Mm-hmm. They're just like world-class sculptors. Yeah, yeah. And we wanted to bring them in on this project to get the most out of the flying poses. It mm-hmm. was really, really an important thing that we wanted to explore.
Mm-hmm. And then whenever you get them painted up, just look at this, guys. I mean, are these ones that you bring along to events for whenever people are coming to see you at like Essen and things like that?
Yes. Yeah. These were first displayed at Essen mm-hmm. last year. Yes. Yeah.
I remember because we did the interview with you guys.
Yeah.
And I was standing with the camera going, I wish I was playing right now. But I love just the amount of detail you're working into these. Because again, it is a board game, but you guys are going over the top on the sculpts. You're not letting it just be, oh, it's just gaming pieces. You are making full-on gorgeous miniatures. And that's something that just warms my heart. All right, anything we missed?
No, I think that's basically it. Yeah. Yeah, we're very happy with the game. We work in the design for over 2 years without having any miniatures, anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we really put our heart in the design, although we were playing with this ugly, crappy... Can I say that?
That's not these.
Right. And it was magnificent to send that over to a big child
mm-hmm.
and see that become this, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, instead of just tokens with the name written on them...
It's like you take a leap of faith.
Yes.
And it works.
Yes.
It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
So well, there's something always very special whenever you have a concept and you meet someone who just snaps and it gets the idea.
And they bring it to a different level.
There you go.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I tell you what, everybody, get your comments in below. Tell us, what do you think of Korball? Are you looking forward to this one? I know I certainly am. Get those comments in. We'll move on. We'll see you again soon. Okay, now this is a game that I am really enjoying the look of. I love sort of the, what would you call it? How to describe it? The way they're actually doing the 3D movement of the space.
Falling through space.
Yes, I like the idea of that. And I love the fact that your tactics are having to change and evolve
over every single round of the game
playing. Nobody wants to get hit in the face with an asteroid.
You know, there's one or two characters in there that don't mind it so much.
And that's one of the things that I like about it is it's every time you've tried to play something like this, or even a space combat game, it's always two-dimensional. Mm-hmm. No matter how they do it, it always ends up being two-dimensional.
Yep.
By having that, I want to say floating board, isn't that what they called it? Yeah, I think it's the floating board.
Yeah, which is the clear perspex.
Yeah, which means that you can swap out the layer underneath and you are playing your two-dimensional game like normal, but you are constantly falling through, so the terrain is coming up to meet you and the gates are changing. So yeah, it's just, it's a really nice, interesting dynamic.
Yeah, I do want to kind of like...
Nobody's done it before.
I can't think of anyone. No. If you know, put it below. But one thing I would love to see from this is like, you know the way back in like the early 2000s, you had all the CGI cartoons rolling out? I would love to see someone do that with this and just actually have even just one episode of a game being played in CGI and just seeing them fired out from the space station, flying through the asteroid field and just playing it out. I think it could be amazing. I want it. Yeah. It'll never happen, but I want it.
No.
All I can think is reboot.
Yeah.
That old kid show.
No, you see, for me, it was Heavy Gear, the old CGI show. Yeah. I remember it, and it was great fun. Any for yourself, Jerry? No, you were too old.
CGI. Puppets were good enough. Puppets and artists with pens were good enough for me.
Oh, so you hit all the newfangled Netflix series that are coming out then?
I don't know. I haven't seen any of them.
Yep. Not for Jerry.
not for me. I did see some CGI stuff. I seen CGI Captain Scarlet, which was worse in every way than the original Captain Scarlet.
It was.
It really was terrible, which was prime example of how older's always better.
Although there's one that I watched recently that has just came out on Netflix, Ultraman, has been redone.
Right.
But it's kind of weird because it's not a remake of the original, it's a sequel, so it's like Son of Ultraman.
I haven't seen that.
Have you not?
No. Oh. I don't think I've seen Ultraman either.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, it was nice.
It was like Condor Man.
Condor Man? No. No. I don't remember Condor Man. Condor Man. Hang on. Oh, God.
Condor Man was amazing.
Way back when.
Yeah, way back. Anyway, we digress, as does Michael Crawford.
This is something I find happening more and more, is as I'm getting older, I start reminiscing about the old cartoons from my childhood, and I turn to people and go, do you remember this one? Yes. Do you remember this one? No. Do you remember this one? No. God damn it, you had a crap childhood.
Could be. Maybe they're just outside playing with friends.
Well, also, remember now, Justin, the '80s and the '90s are old now. They're old. They're retro now. So,
Well, I mean, like it's what
you know how
it?
Retro is.
30 years back is when stuff becomes retro, isn't it?
That's what they tell me. We're not kicking the backside of the 20th anniversary of The Matrix.
No way!
It's this June is the 20th anniversary, which means that's bound to be prime for a reboot.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly. Or a new Netflix TV series, because that's happening a lot.
Yeah, you know, gives them something to do now that Disney have taken all their people back.
That's a shame.
Mm.
All right, anyway, Ben, you've picked out some Kickstarters for us to wind out the show, yeah?
Yeah. So the first of these Kickstarters is by Ryan Laucat, who is a phenomenal designer, and he always brings some amazingly beautiful games to the tabletop. And this one is called Rome, from the company that he works for, which is Red Raven Games. This is a game for 2 to 4 players. It plays in around 30 to 45 minutes, and you are taking control of a band of heroes that have been sent out into the world of Arzium to try and find lost heroes and adventurers who have wandered out into the wastelands and the wilderness and completely forgotten who they are. And so what you have to do in the game is that you have to use your survivors with the patterns on their cards to search a range of cards in the middle of the table. So each of the different heroes that you have will have, for example, one square that they could look at, or multiple versions of that, which sort of like can be done. They look a little bit like Tetris pieces or something like that. And you have to try and search each of the different cards in the middle of the tabletop. And the person who does the most searching will be able to claim that card for themselves and bring it into their adventuring group. That then means you'll be able to use their special powers, their searching abilities and that kind of thing to look for adventures further and further away from you as you explore this wilderness. The person with the most adventures in their party at the very end of the game is the winner, because you managed to go and bring back enough heroes and bring back all their stories and their legends and their folklore. As well as the sort of like searching aspect of the game, you can also do a whole bunch of extra bits and pieces. So each of the different characters might have special abilities. They might also allow you to search for gold and treasure on each of these different maps, in which case you'll be able to pick up and buy sort of nice, cool equipment that allow you to do one-off things and stuff as well in your turn. All the artwork and all the different characters for the game are actually based on some that exist within old Red Raven games. So if you've played games like Above and Below, near and far and that kind of thing, you can use all of those characters will be very, very familiar to you. So if you like those storytelling games, you've got a really nice crossover there. As well as that, as I said at the beginning of this, the artwork for this game is just stunning. I love everything they've done with it. It's a really wonderful style, and I love that it's carried across pretty much all of the games that Red Raven did within this Ryan Glaucut series. And yeah, just a fantastic little game that, you know, isn't very tough to play. The rules are very, very simple and easy to get stuck into, but I think there's lots of strategic depth in kind of when you search certain cards. Do you do go all in for one of them, or do you try and spread yourself out, that kind of thing as well. So there's some really good sort of decision making thrown into the mix there as well. When it comes to stretch goals and things like that for the game, they're sort of working on upgrading the existing components for it, as well as adding in a few adventures and that kind of thing as well. So there's not too much heavy stuff going on in the background or sort of additional things you need to worry about. But yeah, a really cool looking game from the guys at Red Raven. So if you're interested in this one, go and check out Rome on Kickstarter. It's got about 10 days left on the campaign at this point. So yeah.
Yeah, very and it's cool. Like 8 times funded, isn't it?
Mm. It is. It's very well funded because everybody loves their Ryan Glaucut games. So
we'll say, if you're Googling that, there is a second Room on Kickstarter,
yes,
which is a terrible online game, like what the kids would play using pixels.
Oh, yes. I see.
Stay yes. away from that.
Oh, the art style in this is absolutely gorgeous, and I do like the idea of sort of adventuring, you know, exploring type games. It's very fun to sit down with everybody.
That lizard keeps winking at me.
It does.
Just saying.
It does.
The lizard's wink.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's simple things like that that, yeah. Oh, God, that's creepy.
See, told you.
Yeah. You just did it to me. Stop it. Bad lizard. Yeah, I think this is definitely one to go and check out. What else you got for us, Beth?
So the next one of these games is actually a remake of a classic that was in the Board Game Geek Top 50 for a very, very long time. And this one is called Hammer of the Scorts. And this is by Columbia Games, who have redone this. That was a terrible impression. I'm very, very sorry to everybody who's Scottish out there. I'm so sorry. But this is a game set during the period of 1200 to 1300, where you're either controlling the forces of the Scottish or the forces of the English. If you're playing as the Scottish, then you'll be controlling William Wallace as he tries to band together all the Scottish lords in sort of like a way to overthrow the English and claim back sovereignty over Scotland. And if you're playing as the English, then you'll be doing the horrible, horrible thing and stamping on the Scotsmen until they go back home to the north and hide in their mountains so that you can claim that you are the best over everything. Boo the English. That's what I say. But
well, there's something wrong with that statement, Ben.
I might be English, but I know that we were terrible, terrible people back then. So it was a horrible, horrible time. Mm. But yeah, so one of the cool things about this game actually is that it uses something that you may have seen in a game called Stratego, whereby you can see the strength of your units, but you can't see your enemies. So the little blocks you've got in the game are only one-sided. So you can see that this particular block has such and such strength to it, or where your king is, or where your lords are, but the opponent doesn't. And then the other cool thing to this sort of like fog of war mechanic they've got in there is they've got this thing called the step reduction mechanic. So as you fight, your armies rotate and they get weaker and weaker. So you might see an enemy that has loads and loads of cubes on the board, but they might all be completely fatigued and run down. So you really, really have to think about the sort of like the battles that you fought in the past, where things are in them at the moment. Are they back at their castle recuperating, that kind of thing, and judge whether or not you'll be able to strategically strike out and take locations on the board. As I say, there's going to be some really cool stuff in there for both the Scottish and the English, and each of them will have their own objectives, and sort of you're working towards each of those, which are very, very asymmetrical towards the end of the game to see who can claim dominion and stuff at the end. As well as the sort of core game, which is all about this fight between William Wallace and the English, there's also an additional scenario that gets added into the game, which follows the period directly after William Wallace's death, where you take control of Robert the Bruce, or the Outlaw King, if you've seen the Netflix series, movie, which is very, very cool, where you play as Robert the Bruce, trying to do pretty much exactly what William Wallace tried to do, trying to stave off the English, get them out of Scotland, and cement his rule as King of Scotland as well. So, yeah, a very, very cool game. It's really nice to see a classic being reinvented. They've done a lot of sort of stuff in here to kind of tweak the rules to make it a little bit easier to play. They've upgraded all the components as well. So you've got these really nice cubes and sort of like squares of wood, as you can see there as well. And they've got really nice plush wooden dice for the game, which just sounds amazing. So it's going to have that really, really old school feel to it, which I think is really cool. And the actual map itself looks beautifully illustrated as well. So a newer style game and an older style board game, if you like your war games as well, to go and check it out. So
Interesting one. It's nice to look back to some of these periods of history that you would maybe actually forget about as we cycle on.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, I like this one. I mean, like, of course, before playing this, I'm probably just going to go and sit down and watch the terrible, terrible Mel Gibson movie, but that's just because I like it.
The first one to burn York to the foundations wins. I think that's how that goes.
But yeah, I was going to say, that was the only thing that would make this game even better is if you included the Black Douglas into this, who was like Robert the Bruce's right-hand man, and he was an absolute monster of a crazy dude. His stories in Scotland are amazing. Like, he managed to take a castle basically just with him and like four other people. He came over the walls at night and sort of took out everybody and sort of and opened the gates for the Scottish, which was very cool. He also then went off into like the Holy Land and all kinds of things like that later on in his life. He's a crazy individual. Really want to go and look him up, but yeah, this is a really interesting period of history that I think a lot more people should look at. But if you have, for example, as I say, watched that Netflix movie, this is definitely one to go and check out. So yeah.
All right, I think out of the two I would probably grab Rome, just because I love the art style.
Oh, I love Hammer of the Scots. That looks really interesting.
All right, Ben.
I do like Hammer of the Scots, but I'm not overly a fan of two-player board games, so I may have to go for Rome, I think. But I think both of them are fantastic projects, as I say, that sort of like skirt the new and the old sort of like feel to the tabletop game. So yeah, very cool.
All right, well, I think we will wrap it up for today. There is one bit of a public service announcement I want to do before we go, and that is we have a ton of prizes being announced this weekend. If you want to find out if you're a winner, come across to ontabletop.com. There is a drop-down menu where it says claim prize, and in there is our prize claim center where we list out everybody who has won. In order to claim your prize and in order to view that, you will need to create yourself a free account on the On Tabletop website. Thank you to Ben, thank you to Jerry. I got those back to front, but who cares, it's the weekend, I'm tired.
I'm just gonna throw in a quick thank you to Laughing Boy, because he was the one who set up the Vermintide prizes that we're going to be giving out this weekend as well. So a big thank you to him for that. It was really awesome seeing him work on that and deliver the prizes for everyone as well for that one too. But as Justin was saying, go and check if you've won all the things from the past weekend as over the last couple of weeks as well.
Yep. So, and as a last little reminder, don't forget, by getting your comments, your likes, your subscribes, and dinging our dong in on this episode of the weekend, you could be in with the chance of winning the two-player starter set for Batman the Miniatures game from Night Models.
Go ahead and check out our other content on screen now, and be sure to check out beastsofwar.com for the latest gaming news and gaming let's plays. And while you're at it, why not hit subscribe and remember to ding our dong. Go on, you know you want to click it. Go on.